and accustom yourself to the fact that the market could be up 20% in a month and then give back that 20% over a long weekend. The one thing I'm certain about for 26 is that we will experience breathtaking volatility. If you're prepared for that volatility, both psychologically and financially, you'll do fine. In late 2025, August to be specific, I sold 25% of my junior stock portfolio. I did it because by selling 25%, I recouped all the capital that I had invested in the sector and paid the capital gains tax on the sale. In other words, I sold off 25% of my upside a quarter, and I eliminated my downside. That's a pretty good print.
I'll put a link in the show notes to your conference. Rick, when is it? Where is it at? But I'll put a link
July
in all the
6th through
things.
10, Boca Raton, Florida, the Boca Resort. For those of you who don't know it, 180 acres in downtown Boca, half a mile of Atlantic Ocean waterfront, a palace. Lots to do there, separate and apart from learning, but I encourage you to spend most of your time on learning. If you can't make it to Boca, and by the way, we're going to sell out of physical seats within 30 days. If you can't make it physically, which I would prefer, you can join 3,000 people in 33 countries online, live stream. However you join, live or live stream, you'll have access to the recordings and you'll need them. We're going to give you 46 hours of material, some of which occurs concurrently over 4 days. There's no way you can take it in. You cannot take it in. I put on the conference, I select the speakers, I select the exhibitors, and I still have to play the tapes.
Rick Rule, good afternoon to you, my friend. It's really good to see you. It's been a little while. How are you?
My pleasure, Andy. Thank you for having me back.
No, anytime, anytime. So we're in mid-February here, but I couldn't get you earlier because you are in high demand. But I wanted to talk about, just set this up with, what are if you ha do you have any things, or what are your expectations for 26, if you have any expectations? And I'll share mine.
Well, I'll tell you, I thought 25 was going to be a pretty good year. Boy, was I wrong. It was a spectacular year. And I think part of the performance that I would have expected to enjoy in 26, I enjoyed in 25. Which is to say, I think for the next 10 years, the precious metals and natural resource markets will do well. But I think some of the performance that we would have expected in a normal year was already used up by an extraordinary year. I think we will see, for better or for worse, a lot of volatility. I know that the precipitous decline that we saw February 1st in silver unnerved a lot of folks. I've been in the silver market for 50 years, so it neither unnerved nor surprised me. But we'll see more of that. But I think your listeners need to come into 2026, understanding that the move that occurred in part of 2024 and 2025 was really reducing tension on a coiled spring. In other words, some of the move that we enjoyed in 2025 was a delayed move from prices that didn't move in 20, 21, 22, 23, 24. That latent energy has been used up. So don't look for 26 to repeat 25. Look for it to be a good year, but not a great year. Think of it in the context of what has to happen over 10 years. And accustom yourself to the fact that the market could be up 20% in a month and then give back that 20% over a long weekend. The one thing I'm certain about for 26 is that we will experience breathtaking volatility. If you're prepared for that volatility, both psychologically and financially, you'll do fine. If you aren't, you'll be shaken out for no reason.
About that. So you might have used the same saying, and I use it all the time, and our friend Doug Casey's used it. Volatility is your friend.
It
Embrace
can be.
volatility. It can
It
be.
can be.
It can be. Work that out a little bit more for me in the in regards to being disciplined and portfolio management. And I say that to give all viewers and listeners, this is not a pat on the back, because as Rick just alluded, I was early to this move and I did great in 25, but I was early to that move and I took my lumps before then. So just full disclosure. But I was started taking profits in fall 25, and it was just really just for anything else, just an exercise in discipline. I just had to take money off the table. Comment about that and the importance of that. And again, that's using volatility as your friend.
Well, that's correct. We, in October of 25, had a day that, had it occurred in commodities, would have been lock limit up. Mm-hmm. There was no ask in the junior equities markets. There were all bids. I've learned in my life that you do whatever the market makes really, truly easy. If there's no asks, you serve the market and throw up an ask. Mm-hmm. If there's no bid, you serve the market and throw up a bid. So I, like you, in late 2025, August to be specific, I sold 25% of my junior stock portfolio. Mm-hmm. I did it because by selling 25%, I recouped all the capital that I had invested in the sector and paid the capital gains tax on the sale. Mm-hmm. In other words, I sold off 25% of my upside a quarter, and I eliminated my downside. That's a pretty good print. Now, I had what I guess was an unusually good collection of stocks, because the remaining 75% has now attained the value that it was before the sale. Do I feel bad about the sale because of the money left on the table? Not a bit. Mm-hmm. Not a bit. Volatility works both ways.
Right.
What you learn, if you've been in markets as long as I, is that when a stock chart goes parabolic, what the Canadians call a hockey stick chart, where it goes straight up, it's going to go straight down for a while after that. The backside of the stick is just as steep as the front side, but if you're long, it's a lot less fun. So from my viewpoint, whenever I see a parabolic upside, assuming that nothing else has changed, I sell. Mm-hmm. Similarly, when I see a day like we had not too long ago, where it's a parabolic downside, you might buy. Mm-hmm. I'd like, as an example right now, to increase fairly substantially my oil and gas portfolio. But the oil and gas stocks are trading up. They're trading up because of news in Iran. They're trading up because of Venezuela. They're trading up because of Trump's allegedly tougher Russian sanctions. And so I'd like that market to cool off. I'd like the oil quote, which is now priced up to, you know, spiked up to 66. I'd like it back around 53, 54. And it wouldn't surprise me if I got it. I'd like to greatly increase my position in Schlumberger. Schlumberger is on fire, which is not what you want if you're a buyer. It's what you want if you're a seller. So I'm praying for a little negative volatility in the oil price.
So I was going to go there later, but let's go there now, because we also talked about diversifying our portfolio. And I paraphrase, I want to make sure I get this right. You said at the time the oil and gas market was similar to the gold market X amount of years ago. That could have, yep. It was just a few years ago. And I was already nibbling in some of my favorite names before then. And then I went a little bit bigger, but I still don't have enough. Right. And this move has scared me, not scared me in the sense that I'm right, but I'm like you, man. I like to buy stuff at a bargain. I like pain. I want pain. So,
I was able for the last 2 years until very recently to buy Exxon.
Right.
I think I said in an interview with you, Exxon at $100 is a gift. Well, that's fine, but it's at 160.
You know? Right.
So that's dated.
And, I told my mother, who watched that interview, I just go, she goes, what do I buy? I go, honey, mom, just buy Exxon. I'll send this to her. So then she did.
And, you know, Exxon at 100 is not the same as Exxon at 160.
Right.
But because I already have a big position in Exxon, I don't have to buy it.
Right.
Make no mistake, I think over 5 years it's going much higher. Mm-hmm. And if you and I interview in 5 years, if I'm still alive, we'll probably look back at this and say, why were we price sensitive? It didn't matter. But right now it matters.
Right. Now, well, that's the thing. Yeah, it matters right now. Go ahead.
I need to say something else, Andy.
Please.
I bought, that's not true. I put in bids on five oil and gas juniors yesterday. I was underinvested in the speculative part of my oil and gas because I said to you, the big guys are so cheap, I don't need to speculate. I get a good enough move out of beta. I don't need to chase alpha.
Right.
But there's a subsector of oil and gas juniors, people that aren't in the United States and Canada. They're in countries that people hate. And they aren't in shale. They're in conventional offshore exploration. And those stocks haven't moved at all. There are some seismically supported plays that I think have wonderful risk-reward parameters, provided that you understand that they're risky.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to give you the names because I'm not Phil yet. But let me tell you what they share in common.
Yeah.
Each one is exploring for what could be a very large discovery. And each of them are well seismically supported, and they have producing analogs in the same basin.
Mm-hmm.
Which is to say, there's good exploration science. They are well enough seismically supported that the industry would tell you that each discovery hole stands between a 25 and a 35% chance of success. Turning that the other way around, there's a one chance, pardon me, there's three chances in four that you fail.
Right.
or two chances in three that you fail. In other words, the probability is failure.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're public, in other words, because I'm not drilling a well with my own money, where if it dry holes, it goes to zero, the likelihood is that on an unsuccessful effort, I lose 35 to 50% of my money mm-hmm. on any unsuccessful effort. By spreading my risks over five bets, the upside is if I hit, I get 15 or 20 to 1. So the gross arithmetic is I have five starts. I have a, let's be conservative and say 25% chance of success on any start, mm-hmm. which means statistically over five starts, I likely have one success.
Right.
On my four fails, I lose 35% each on four starts. And on my hit, I get 15 to 1.
Yeah.
That's pretty good math.
The math works.
That's pretty really good really. Math. What I like about it is there's no premium. There's no success premium.
Mm-hmm.
These little penny dreadful silver mining stocks, you know, somebody right now gets some surface samples, particularly if they get the surface samples in British Columbia or, you know, Colorado in the United States. The surface sample gives them a $15 million valuation, which is to say there's an incredible premium built in for the expectation of success.
Mm-hmm.
In these little offshore juniors, because they're in countries that many people can't pronounce, offshore exploration is unloved. These countries are unloved, and oil and gas is mostly unloved.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a situation where I couldn't help myself. I had to take this exploration shot.
Okay, so I want to work a lot about that because I love the risk assessment, and it's almost gaming right. in the sense of just playing probabilities, right?
Right.
You're playing probabilities. But what's also, I think, key most people lose is that you're going for a big asset.
I can't emphasize this to your listeners enough. Mm-hmm. If you're taking the risk inherent in exploration, which whether you admit it to yourself or not, has the probability of failure. In other words, it's more likely than you that you lose money than you don't. The wins have to amortize the losers. And you can't be playing a speculative game, a real speculative game, for a double or a triple. That can be your interim goal. At a double mm-hmm. or a triple, you take enough money off the table that you've de-risked the rest. I get that part.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to be playing the game for a 10-bagger. Or else, arithmetically, you're not speculating. You're losing. There are a lot of people for whom a win is psychological, which is to say they take a risk of a wipeout. They make 30% on a trade and they go home happy.
Mm-hmm.
Those people are dumb because the expectation over 10 starts is that you have six or seven losers. If you make 30% on two and you lose 25% on eight, guess what? You might feel good about the two. But you've done yourself an enormous disservice financially.
Mm-hmm.
In exploration, the size of the prize, the probability of success, and the cost of the test are the questions you have to ask yourself.
Okay, so another thing is that you mentioned, because I have all US and Canadian drillers, as I call them.
Yep.
And producers. I'm interested in other jurisdictions, but what I guess my question would be, how do you determine value in these other jurisdictions? And that's what I'm afraid of. I have to be it has to be stupid cheap for me to go into some of these places, right?
Well, I would sort of agree with you. But I have to say, my worst experience with political risk was in the People's Republic of California.
Yeah, right.
I'm not trying to say that Guyana is good or Namibia is good. I'm trying to say the United States is bad, too.
Yeah.
It's predictably bad, which is good. What we do have in the United States mostly is the rule of law. Some parts of the United States, like California, they aren't paying attention to the rule of law, but it exists. Mm-hmm. There's predictability, but you have to look at the other jurisdictions on a case by case basis. What's the fiscal regime like? Can you get a fiscal stability agreement? Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of these countries, they're real cool with you fiscally until you make a discovery. And then when they see that there's $3 or $4 billion to steal, they change the terms after
they
the
take
fact.
It. Yeah.
But if you have a fiscal stability agreement before you drill the well, where they're bound by that agreement for 20 years and where it's arbitrated in Stockholm or Geneva, that's a better circumstance. Mm-hmm. In some cases, a much better circumstance. So you have to do it on a case by case by case basis. When I see smarter, more sophisticated players than I, let's say I see Exxon in a basin, Chevron in a basin, Total in a basin, I feel better about that basin when the concession that I'm drilling or that I'm even just shooting seismic on has a fiscal stability agreement in place with a host government where they can't change the terms on me after discovery, I can afford to be more generous. Mm-hmm. The difficulty I have, well, difficulty, I guess the advantage I have is I'm competing with speculators who don't know what a fiscal stability agreement is, mm-hmm. much less are willing to take the time to figure out if there is one. So to come down to the five stocks that I bid on yesterday, they were narrowed down from a list of 31 stocks that I spent, I don't know, 3 or 4 months pawing through data about.
And what was it then that made you pull the trigger on the bid or hit the bid?
Really the seismic. The probability of success. Now, the other thing was that each one of these five companies has somebody who I've done successful business with in the past.
So you knew them?
Well, I knew some people in the company.
Right.
If it wasn't the CEO, it was the chairman, it was a director, it was the largest shareholder. I knew the reasons, if any, why the stocks were cheap.
Yeah.
One of them is preparing to go into a truly foul jurisdiction. and they're going into a foul jurisdiction in an asset that I used to own part of before it was nationalized. And I really like the asset. You know,
I know what you're talking about.
I really like the asset. So.
I think I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
So that's a great segue. Because you have a conference coming up, and I'm glad you said what you just said, because my experience has only been 2 years now, just right. So everybody knows. I've had great experiences both years. Shout out to your staff, by the way, Callie and Barb, Michelle, yep. Fantastic people. But really, there's two of my best. This is what is just added to my experience. Number one is great companies. I got to know the companies, and I'll shout out all five. To the first three I met in 24 and the next two I met in 25. I made money. I think those are the only ones I invested in. And there are a lot of great companies, everybody.
Right.
There are a lot of great companies. But the first year is Integra, did very well. Luca Mining did fantastic. Right. And Contango Ore, which I did reasonably well, and I still own all three. Last year is Ecora Resources, which is now Ecora Royalties. Great, great model. And they're hitting it out of the park. And then Revival Gold, which I made money on, and I think is going to hit it out of the park this year.
Yeah.
I got to know the CEOs there. And you just mentioned that, hey, I knew people in the company. And that's what I did at your conference. So I don't want to say it was life-changing for me, but it was certainly, or even portfolio-changing, but yeah, it was portfolio-changing for me. So thank you for that.
Well, thank you. You know, you get out of my conference what you put into it.
Right.
If you come there, I'm not saying you shouldn't go on the boat cruise, but if you come just to go on the boat cruise, you know, you can go on a boat cruise anytime.
Right.
What's lovely about this conference is that you can, and not just you, but your listeners can walk up to the CEO. And they will talk. If you listen to my pre-conference interviews, which you should, I interview every CEO of every exhibitor before the conference so that listeners can utilize their time at the conference more efficiently. But at the end of every CEO interview, I ask specifically, who at the company can my attendees learn more about the company from? The right answer is when the CEO says, me. Mm-hmm. The buck stops with me. Most of my CEOs will say, here's my email address, but if you want, here's my cell phone.
Mm-hmm.
George Salamis at Integra says the best place to learn about Integra is by calling me. I'm the CEO. I'm the largest shareholder. Here's my cell phone number.
Yeah. Right. On that note, I was walking the halls and I ran into Rob McEwen and I ran into Frank Guscia, and they gave me their cell phone numbers. These titans in the industry. And that was the second big value that I got, was just walking the halls and networking and meeting people. So
it's important that your listeners know that. Your listeners, who many of whom have talked to me because they've submitted portfolios to me, commonly say, well, Rick, you have access to all these people, right? Rob McEwen won't talk to me. Wrong. A good entrepreneur is so excited about what he or she is doing that they can't wait to talk to you.
Yeah.
They don't want to talk to you about the Super Bowl. They don't give a damn about the halftime act. That's nothing that matters to them. They don't want to talk to you about golf. Many of them don't even want to talk to you about their grandchildren. They want to talk to you about their company. And somebody who isn't that involved, isn't that fanatic, is telling you something too. It means they don't have the drive to make it.
Yeah. Couldn't agree more. So I'll put a link in the show notes to your conference. Rick, when is it? Where is it at? But I'll put
July 6th through 10, Boca Raton, Florida, the Boca Resort. For those of you who don't know it, 180 acres in downtown Boca, half a mile of Atlantic Ocean waterfront, a palace, lots to do there, separate and apart from learning, but I encourage you to spend most of your time on learning. If you can't make it to Boca, and by the way, we're going to sell out of physical seats within 30 days.
Yeah.
If you can't make it physically, which I would prefer, you can join 3,000 people in 33 countries online, live stream. However you join, live or live stream, you'll have access to the recordings and you'll need them. We're going to give you 46 hours of material, some of which occurs concurrently, over 4 days. There's no way you can take it in. You cannot take it in. I put on the conference. I select the speakers. I select the exhibitors. And I still have to play the tapes.
Mm-hmm.
So to get your money's worth, it isn't 4 days of your life. It's at least eight, 4 days live, and then four more days reviewing the tapes. And by the way, listen to the interviews before the conference. Come to the conference fully armed. I interview the exhibitors. I interview the speakers. If you pay attention ahead of time to what matters to you, you can use your time at the conference more efficiently.
100%. Just my own strategy, what I did is I just made a list of companies, just went a list, and I started doing my own due diligence before I got there, and then I targeted them, who I was going to talk to and who was I going to put my money in, and then I whittled it down there more. So that's what I did. So
yeah. I had occasion, admittedly it's my conference, I had occasion last year, I got up early, went down to breakfast, there's Amar Al-Jindi, CEO of Agnico Eagle, sitting by himself.
Think about that.
You know, may I join you? Of course. You know, it's wonderful.
Yeah. To a lesser note, my wife and I were just standing at a table. This was in 24, just by ourselves talking. And Empress Royalty came up to us, Alexandra. And I didn't buy them, but I should have, but they just came
She's
by
a
and just started
superstar.
talking. And boy, did they do well since that time.
She's a superstar.
She is. She is a superstar. But hey, so I want to pull on this string a little bit more about oil here. So I think this is my thesis. I think why it exploded. And by the way, to all my viewers and listeners, we're putting a link to all of that in the show notes. You'll have access to it. You need to get on that soon because I'm not surprised, but to my disappointment, I say that the boat cruise has already sold out. And this is going to sell out. So you're going to have to act quick. Just to everybody that wants to go, don't put it off. Act quick. Links in the show notes. So I really have this thesis, Rick, and it's a and it just goes back to my portfolio management days. And it's just about capital rotation, right? And capital flow. And I want to know what you think. I think I know what you think, but I don't want to speak for you. I want you to speak. So I think there's so much money made in gold. I'm a gold bull to everybody. I have a lot of gold stock, but I think we're taking a break here for the first half of the year. That's just excess got to be worked out. I think, and that's what we saw in January, a lot of this money is rotating into energy, oil and nat gas, but specifically oil. That's why I started buying as strategically last oil assets last November, December-ish. I wish I bought more. I'm waiting for it to come down, come to me. But that's my thesis. I think oil is going to have a banger in 26, and really for a while. We're still in the early innings of that. But I wanted to know what your thoughts were on capital rotation and just work out the oil thesis for me.
I kind of don't do capital rotation myself. I take advantage of other people's capital rotation when they're wrong. I agree with you that gold gave us too much last year. I think gold trades a lot higher over 10 years. But I think the tensions come out of that coiled spring that we talked about earlier in the interview. So I wouldn't look for a repeat of 25 and 26. I would look for a lot of volatility, as we said earlier, and I think that's a good thing. I think in the very, very near term, oil's ahead of itself too. Trading up from 52 to 65, in the context of the Iran conflict and Venezuela, that's a news trade. And guys who trade news usually lose. What I like about the oil business is that it's fundamentally mispriced. There's a lot of price elasticity or demand inelasticity. I don't know what you pay in your state for gasoline. Let's say it's $3 a gallon. You might not want to, but you would pay six. If your choice is six or your car doesn't start, you're going to pay the six. So there's a lot of room for the price to rise. And the industry is underinvesting in sustaining capital expense between $1 and $2 billion a day. Now, that doesn't impact them in terms of their production in 26 or maybe 27. But 28, 29, it starts to bite. 2 years ago, I could say that this deferred sustaining capital investments was happening among big companies who were returning capital to shareholders, and it was happening in state-owned firms who were diverting free cash flow to politically expedient domestic spending programs. Now, like Continental Resources, HAM, he has taken his rig count in the Williston Basin down from 18 rigs to none.
Jeez.
What he said is that basin doesn't support drilling at $60 oil.
Think
The
about
truth
that.
is, people, when they look at the oil business, they confuse the capital structure. They look at the lifting cost of oil, which might be 15, 18 bucks a barrel, and they say, well, these guys are making a shitload of money at 60. That's wrong. That doesn't include amortization and depreciation. It doesn't include cost of capital, and it doesn't include tax. The fully loaded cost to produce a barrel of oil worldwide, if you include Pemex, National Iranian Oil Company, PDVSA, is closer to $60 a barrel. if you add back theft, which is what I call tax and royalties, and cost of capital. So you make the stuff for 60, you sell it for 52, lose $8 a barrel, you do it 102 times a day, it gets unpleasant. So unpleasant that, as I say, the industry is underinvesting substantially. As an investor, what you need to do is, understanding that, you need to segregate in your investment, in your investments, companies that are making the sustaining capital investments.
Mm-hmm.
Ironically, the people who are cannibalizing themselves, who aren't making the sustaining capital investments, are paying high dividends and getting share buybacks.
Mm-hmm.
So the companies who are making the wrong decisions are being rewarded in the market. And I particularly like that.
Right.
I particularly like it when my competition, who is often smarter than I, is doing the wrong things for the wrong reason. And you're seeing that happen in spades in the oil and gas business today. Just in spades.
Okay, so what you all said, I just have several questions. I'm going to rapid fire here, just for sake of time. You just said the oil market is mispriced. So then that begs the question, and I think I know what you'll say because you're a libertarian.
Right.
What is the right price?
And well, then, near term, I think the price comes down.
All right.
It's trading up on news.
Agreed.
The news matters much less than people think it does. Near term, I would love to see the oil price back below 60.
Yeah.
But I think the oil price needs to be at a minimum 70. The oil market doesn't care what I think the price should be, first of all. That's an opinion as opposed to a fundamental.
Mm-hmm.
And markets don't go to their equilibrium. They overshoot both ways.
Mm-hmm.
What's more important to me is that the consequence of systemic underinvestment in sustaining capital and a hiatus in new capital. I mean, nobody other than Exxon is making big project investments.
Mm-hmm.
Not sustaining capital, but new capital. The consequence of that is that three years from now, it is almost certain that the current production surplus, which hangs over the market, becomes a deficit.
Yeah.
You will remember, Andy, the collapse in oil prices that we saw early on in the COVID time, mm-hmm. when demand for transportation fuel fell apart. And the oil quote declined from 90, 92 all the way to zero. Before recovering at $20. At $20, it was pretty clear that within 2.5 or 3 years, either the oil price went above 60 or your car wouldn't start. Those were the only two choices.
Mm-hmm.
And the consequence of 2 years of systemic underinvestment in COVID times meant that the oil price didn't recover to 60, which is what it had to do. It recovered to 85.
Right.
And I think that's what we see again.
Yeah. Okay. So, and correct me if I'm wrong on this. And I do know something about, I'm not by any means an expert, but I do have some background in oil. You can't just, you don't really turn off oil and you don't really turn it on either. So it's not like right. You can just, there's a faucet there and you just crank it out higher. Correct me on I'm wrong. And then second question really is, what do you think of the valuation of oil service companies? That could be a way to play this, as well as I know you just put a bid in for exploration, but do you like exploration more than producers? Or yeah, just work that out for me.
Well, you asked three questions there, so I'll try to answer all three.
Right.
For the investment part of my portfolio, which is most of my portfolio, I'm not in the explorers. I'm in the Exxons of the world.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need to take alpha risk because there's so much money to be made in beta.
Right.
You know, if you would have asked me a year ago what I do in the oil business, I'd say Exxon. You know, just relax. Buy the best. I was on record as saying that I thought Exxon was a 5-year triple from 100.
Yeah.
What do you want? Right? You get a 3% yield while you wait, a 5-year triple? Come on.
Yeah.
You know, this doesn't require luck. The only thing it requires you to do is sit still. And I'm, you know, at my age, I'm good at that. So now, in terms of investments, I have a much more full portfolio. Where I wasn't was speculation. In other words, my speculative portfolio in oil and gas, unlike my speculative portfolio in mining, was pretty empty.
Mm-hmm.
And what What appealed to me was that there was one subset of oil juniors that the market hadn't caught on to at all. The 200
Got it.
million market cap Western Canadian Sedimentary Basin stock has moved from a $200 million valuation to a $280 million valuation. Is it over? No. But is that $280 million valuation substantially cheaper than a $6 or $7 billion Canadian valuation for a better company? No. So I'd rather be in the bigger company with less risk. With the international offshore explorers, these things are truly orphans. They are truly, truly, truly orphans. I look at the trading pattern, and the existence of a bid moves the stock up. The existence of an offer moves the stock down. I mean, these things are trading by appointment. So I know that I have to use good till cancel limit orders, but sometimes there's somebody who's been waiting to get off.
And they'll hit the bid.
Well, they'll
The
wait.
fellow to, yeah.
They'll see if the thing comes up as a consequence of the bid. But then, boom. And that's exactly the market I love. I love illiquid markets, mispricing that occurs because of illiquidity, and a real anomalous difference between risk and reward, with the caveat that I'm both financially and psychologically able to bear the risk.
Yeah. Oil services, do you have any of those, or what are your thoughts
I
of the?
do. I need to say, I've been speculating on oil service stocks for about 50 years, and unfortunately, I'm still not all that good at it. That comes in process and technology. And I spend so much time doing upstream analysis in oil and gas that I haven't kept up with the service technology. I own Schlumberger because I think it's the most technologically advanced oil field service stock in the world. And I think they'll continue to be. Their research and development spent expenditure in seismic and logging, just their annual expenditure exceeds the gross sales of many of their competitors.
Yeah, stupid.
And where they have a 3 or 4 year technical advantage now, 3 or 4 years from now, when the competitors catch up, Schlumberger will be 4 or 5 years ahead. That's a great business. As a young man, I had the extreme good fortune of working for a private oil and gas family that was extremely sophisticated. Well, two families, a partnership, extremely sophisticated. And they let me get my hands dirty in all parts of the business. I mean, my real job was to run around the world and tell their story and raise money. But they let me do everything just to make me a better employee. And one of the things they let me do was spec out the costs on a couple of wells. And I remember on one particular well, the wireline logging bill was 90,000 bucks, and I found a competitor that would log it for 50. And I went to my boss. I said, "I saved you 40,000 bucks." And I remember he sat me down. He says, "Rick, this is going to be a real good lesson for you. I'm going to make a $3 million completion decision based on the data from that log, and a Schlumberger log for 90 is a much better deal than their competitor at 50. The data was enough better that he would pay almost double the cost to get the data." And I remember thinking, that's a good business.
Well, it goes into a thesis I have of I was thinking of the 49 gold rush, right? And it's like, who made all the money? The people that sold all of the equipment to the gold miners. And so I'm applying that, or trying to apply that really poorly, to the oil market, right? So I have oil stocks, all of that, but I was like, these, whether it's a well or whether it's a field or whatever, these are highly underdeveloped, but not only underdeveloped, they're undertaken care of, just because of oil prices where they're at. And you can see so many deals out there. And so I'm like, I should pick up some of these. But again, I
Andy,
don't.
your gross thesis is right. When the capital expenditure cycle kicks up, particularly if Venezuela stabilizes, and you get a realistic fiscal code in Venezuela, there's going to be $100 billion spent there. A lot of guys are going to make it. The difficulty is when you use the gold rush in 1849 as an analogy. There was no analysis of technology that you needed to do. A shovel was a shovel, a pick was a pick, a stake was a stake, and a pair of breeches, before the improvement that Levi's brought in, was a pair of breeches. You had to worry about logistics. How do you get the pick there? Stuff like that. But the analysis that you have to do to play the game today is analyzing competing technologies. And that's, I've learned at least, much, much, much harder. I'm going to buy something with a symbol rig, Global Marine, which is merging with their second largest competitor, and will be not merely the largest, but far and away the largest provider of offshore drilling services. I'm going to do that because of hegemony in some basins that are going to get drilled. And the synergies involved in the elimination of duplicate overheads between these two companies, I'm going to do that. That's not a real sophisticated play for me. The biggest and the best is something I can afford to own. I'm going to own, well, I do own Schlumberger for the same reason. Probably I should own Halliburton, but I'm not sure at $60 how much demand there's going to be for pressure pumping in the Permian and other basins. In other words, Halliburton's best days in terms of the pressure pumping business may be behind it. And I see enough opportunity myself in rig and Schlumberger that I don't need to own Halliburton. And I certainly don't need to come down the quality trail anymore because I'm competing with young analysts in Houston who know those businesses inside out. And they're going to kick my ass every day.
Yeah, well, that's exactly it. I would just stick to the big boys in this. And I don't need to really, well, I can, but I don't really have to go any further down. Rick, talk a little bit really quick about people want to send you a portfolio for review. Talk about that. I've done it. It's a great service and it's a great value. It's free. Yeah, mention that real quick.
Yeah, I've for 35 years. I have personally ranked people's natural resource portfolio. I do it for free. By the way, I learn a lot, so I'm not trying to say I don't benefit. I learn a lot creating portfolios, but I do it for free. Works like this. You go to my website, ruleinvestmentmedia.com, and you list your natural resource stocks. Sidebar, Andy, no crypto, no tech stocks, no pot stocks, just natural resource stocks. And I'll email you back the rankings, one being best, 10 being worst, and I'll comment on individual issues like Schlumberger as an example, if I think my comments might have value. That's absolutely free. The second step in a relationship with me is the Rule Classroom. There are over 300 hours of instructional programming, ruleclassroom.com, weekly question and answer sessions for free, discussion groups for free. Other experts, Joe Mazumdar from the Exploration Speculator, Adrian Day, a lot of stuff there. 17,000 members, all free, including 5.5 hours on Introduction to Natural Resource Investing, which tells you how to do your own rudimentary securities analysis so you won't have to listen to the morons on Wall Street. And this is absolutely free. If you want a deeper dive at the Rule Classroom, there is a paywall section, which gives you access to more stuff. But try before you buy. Go to the Rule Classroom. All of the stuff that you need to become a better investor is there. Try it for free. If you use it, then upgrade yourself to paid, access better information. But it's not enough to want to use it. Go there for free. See if you actually use it or not. There's no particular point paying me $20 a month if you're not going to use the service. So try it before you buy it. Rule Classroom. And then once every 90 days, we do a deep dive into one topic or another in a boot camp. These are 8-hour-long sessions. Don't come if you buy the Sunday paper for the funnies or the crossword puzzles. We work you very, very, very hard for 8 hours on one topic, the idea being that we give you enough tools to make money in that topic. We've done silver, we've done uranium, we've done company types like prospect generators. We just did our first ever area play discussion of the Golden Triangle in Northern BC. These are very hard work. We give you more information in 8 hours than you can absorb in 8 hours, but you have access to the tapes for a year. $99. If you don't think you've got your money's worth, we'll give you your money back. But as I say, don't come unless you're prepared to work. This is very, very hard work. I'm delighted to say, Andy, and I think you know this, we have money-back guarantees both on the conference and on the boot camps. And in 30 years of offering money-back guarantees on our investment education products, we've had to refund about 0.1% of the tuitions that we've charged. But the fact that we do offer it means that we have enough comfort and confidence in our content that we can afford to. I don't know of any other information service provider or conference provider who has an unconditional money-back guarantee.
Yeah. Well, Rick, I want to thank you for that. We'll end on that. I just really enjoy our time together. It's always full, very full. And right. You let me put you in the I don't want to say the hot box, but you let me rapid fire questions at you that I think, and you give so much great value back. So I just really want to thank you for that. Love to have you on again before the conference, but if I don't, I'll reach out to Callie to get me on again. But if I don't, I'll see you at the conference. And to all my viewers and listeners, it really is the best out there.
This will be the best one we've done, and we've done a lot of them. So enjoy it.
Yeah. All right. Thank you so much, Rick.
Thank you.